They change cultures. They're heat seekers. They run at adversity and embrace change. These are the Room Tilters.
Somebody who can change the temperature in a room when they walk in. Mm. And that's metaphorical for somebody who can influence those around them and make such an impact quickly, emphatically, and long-lasting, whether it be an organization, a team, a relationship, whatever it might be.
This is the Room Tilters podcast, presented by Limitless Minds. Co-hosts DJ Eitzen and Harry Wilson, founders of peak performance and leadership consulting company, Limitless Minds, explore how the best and brightest change the temperature in a room. From sports, the military, entertainment and media, clinical psychologists to CEOs, this podcast will navigate what it takes to think big and go far. And now, DJ and Harry.
Imagine what it takes to be a pioneer and picture what it would be like to be the first to do something, especially as a minority or someone seen as an outsider. Well, on this episode of the Room Tilters, we have a guest that has done just that. In 2015, Dr. Jen Welter became the first female coach in the NFL, and she was a linebackers coach for the Arizona Cardinals. Jen has a history of being a trailblazer. She was also the head coach of the first Australian women's national team in 2017. She was the first woman to play running back in a men's pro football league, and she was inducted into the first class of the Women's Football Hall of Fame in 2018. She isn't only an athlete and coach. Dr. Welter also holds a doctorate in psychology and a master's in sports psychology. Enjoy the episode.
Awesome. Well, listen, we appreciate you coming on. You know, right off the bat, I had a question for you. So, and it goes to cliches, right? So I hear this a lot, really, because the community that I'm in right now and really have grown up in is interesting, right? Because I've always been like the guy, the token, like black dude in my community. So I'm the guy who provides the diversity for everybody, right? And so for you, you know, you probably hear this a lot just because of, you know, the stages, if you will, that you've been on, like the cliche of we've come a long way, right? We've come a long way. And when it comes to diversity, racism, and other social acceptances, you know, of minorities, you know, and especially in 2020, would you agree with that? Do you think we've come a long way?
Okay, so here's the thing. You know that old phrase, like patience is a virtue?
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, it is not one of mine. Because I want it all right now, right? Like, I don't see the virtue in saying, well, we've come a long way. Well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Well, we have a woman at the table. Well, okay, well, the table is 12 people. Right? Like, how far is that? And so I think we have come far, but we have not come full circle, which is very, very different, right? Like, I love speaking on diversity to people because, first of all, I was accepted as an outsider, right? And those men have and continue to champion me, right? And they'd say, which we thought it was hard for us to get here, but for you, like, we already know. Like, there were rooms that I'd walk into with my players and certain people would walk out of because they didn't think that a female belonged in the football space. They're like, coach, you didn't even get the opportunity to say how much you knew. They just assumed, right? And they would just walk out. That was it. And so the guys and what they witnessed, I mean, you know, I think we've done a really good job being tight through it. Because, you know, as I tell people, I'm like, look, I am in no position to prejudge anyone ever because I would be the easiest person to count out in the space that is my space, right? Like 5'2" female in football. You could easily judge this book by whatever cover you wanted to put on me. And I guarantee it would not cover everything that I've done or what I did to get here. Hmm. I think we have to do a much better job where we look to understand the assets that people are bringing to the table and how they bring them, right? And we want those, not only the people in the room, but we want your insight in that room and in that conversation, because diversity is only as good as the inclusion that comes with it. Okay, so we have you in the room, but you're not really allowed to speak. Then the room's not diverse.
Right.
Because, you know, if I'm redesigning a kitchen, you know, I already told y'all I'm 5'2". Look, that top shelf does not matter to me. I will never reach it. That might be on you, my 6'2" friend. Like, anything on that shelf is yours. I got under, right?
Yeah.
But we have to allow all of those perspectives to come into the conversation, right? Because And then I always love to think of it this way, because that's where the brilliance is. Mm. And I choose brilliance because we think of brilliance in how you rate a diamond.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
A diamond is as brilliant as its ability to capture the light and to take each different facet and really bring it together so that the whole is greater than what you would have seen on the street, because I don't know what a diamond on the street looks like. It looks like a rock. You would think you not even know. And I think too often when we talk about diversity, right, we may have the diamond in the room and never let the facets be brought to light. We have to do a better job of seeing that different is special, right? And looking for ways that we are creating teams where it's not better or worse, right? I always have people ask me, like, what made you better as a coach? Nothing.
Yep, yep.
Somebody maybe communicate with me easier on certain things at certain times, yes, which then elevates the entire team and the entire room. So I think the fact that the conversations are finally where they have needed to be for a long time is really good, but I don't think that we have fully dug in to nearly all of the potential that's there when we really bring that like rich crop of wonderful different perspectives, insights, and give them the platform, not just allow them in the door.
Yeah, I love that. Brilliance. Not a word that's used enough. You know what I mean? Like you hear excellence. I like that. Brilliance. Really strong. You know, Dr. Jen, you this year has been an interesting year, right? We start out with COVID, right? You just mentioned some of the racial tensions that are going on. We're in an election year, right? You constantly have news. You're being bombarded with different things. How are you feeling right now? Right now in the moment, and then what are you doing based on how you're feeling? What are some of the behaviors and things that you're doing to get through and navigate through this year?
You know, first of all, I'm frustrated. Okay. Because we didn't have to be at this harsh a pain point. If we really dug in and loved each other harder and worked and walked with a lot more empathy, we could have been in a much better position right now. I was fine at first, mm-hmm. right? Like I was like, okay, this is what we got to do. You know, it's this many weeks. Right. And, you know, they estimated what, 6. So I'm thinking, OK, we're probably 8 to 10. In my mind, I was like, OK, like, let's do this. We are all in it together. If we all look at the ways in which we focus on what's in our control and we look at ways to contribute to the good of the whole, we can do this. And yet the fact is that we have let divisions that had nothing to do with what was actually going on scientifically pull us apart and make us weak as a country. That I find problematic, right? Like I was talking to somebody, I've done a lot of work in Canada, and I was talking with a Canadian the other day and he just said, how are you doing? And I was like, it's weird. The world's weird. I don't know what else to say. It's weird. We're weird. And I said, how are you doing with us? And he said, you know, it's interesting. It's like we used to have the best downstairs neighbor in the world, and then they built a meth lab. So we're the meth lab downstairs, right, to Canada right now, because we are so explosive and nobody knows what to do with this. And the leadership that the United States has provided to the world is not here. Right? Like, we're like Ricky Bobby, like, oh, if you ain't first, you're last. Like, I don't want to be first in this. I want to be last. I want to have the least cases. I do not want to lead by, oh, we've got the most, we're the best. No, no, like, absolutely no. So we are the meth lab downstairs right now, and we have to get our stuff together. And that means we have to come together. We have to call out bad behaviors. We have to take stances on what that actually looks like, what we need to pull through this, how do we get the best, brightest minds in the room creating the solutions, regardless of anything else, regardless of politics, regardless of any of the boxes that they try to check to divide us, right? Like, I think anytime we try and fit somebody in a box, we're losing a lot of the brilliance, right? Like, We just are. So we need to get the best of the best onto solving the problems, and we need to do it with the compassion first, and really look at the collective good in the world, because that's what we're not doing. And every single one of us can be a part of that solution, right? That's what I find like really troubling. Like for me personally, I did a lot of coaching for people on just even the mindset and how we could do better, right? Because all of a sudden I had time that I normally wouldn't have. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna help people get through this. Like, that's what I can do. You know, I have friends who were, you know, sourcing PPE from around the globe. I don't do that. I can't help you with that. I have friends who are frontline workers. I love you. I appreciate you. I don't have that skill set. So I had to look at where I could move the needle and be of most use. And for me, that's been voice and clarity and coaching, right? Whether it's on the field or in life, that's my skill set. I mean, you know, most people think of me as like coaching in the NFL. I'm like, yeah, I had a PhD for a whole lot of years before I ever coached in the NFL. And I got the PhD to be a unique value proposition because nobody would look at me just straight up football. So I had to not only be one of the best players, but also one of the best minds around the game and understanding the athletes, right?
Yeah.
So how do you take that, right? And that's what I looked at. And, you know, for me, I mean, I moved across the country in the middle of a global pandemic because I had bought a place in LA right before the world shut down. So timing is everything. And I got here the day LA shut down. My furniture was caught in coronavirus purgatory for longer than Noah was on the ark, just to give you all an idea. And so I really had to kind of like dial in, right? Like, how can I help? And when I would feel bad about myself, I would just say, okay, who can I help? Who can I reach out to? What can I do to be a part of the solution? And so tried to be as accessible to people who needed insight as possible. And then also took my ability to cut through situations and started writing kids' books. Because what I knew is that while all the adults were adulting, right, they were looking up at these big insurmountable problems. And all I could picture in my head was like the little kid pulling on the sleeve saying, but mom, what about me? And knowing how much of that they would absorb.
Wow. I mean, you know, you talk about kind of translating, you know, your time as a coach and certainly as a PhD. And I was going to ask you about the coaching piece, right? Cause you know, like I mentioned at the beginning of this thing, you are the first female coach in the NFL with the Arizona Cardinals, NFC West, right? So we know a little bit about the NFC West. So, you know, what were your expectations? You know, I mean, what were your expectations going in into this kind of pioneering kind of position that you're in as being the first female coach? And where they met or where they exceeded, where did you fall in that?
You know, I didn't really know what to expect. I mean, I gotta say, like, that's the hardest thing, right?
Yeah.
For me, being the first is the opportunity and responsibility is to ensure you're not the last, which means don't screw it up.
Yeah.
Don't give them the reason to close the door on everybody else and say, ooh, we had a girl once, but. Like that was my first thing, is like, we have to prove that not only is this possible, but it can be a good thing. And I thankfully think that obviously we did that because other women have gotten opportunities from there. In terms of the players, I mean, you know, they have been and still are my greatest advocates. You know, I've met players who I didn't have in Arizona who are like, oh my gosh, coach, like, so-and-so gave me your number. He said you would get it. Like, you know, can we talk? Can you help? And mostly on the translation points between the game and life.
Yeah.
I can X's and O's with you. I'm great at technique. That's probably my best thing, probably because I'm so little.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't outbig anybody, so I better be really fundamentally sound.
Yeah.
And taking things and making them digestible. But so I've had a lot of guys who I've gotten an opportunity to know and to work with as somebody who gets the game and the game within the game, right? Which we all know are two very different things. So I take that as the most upper level compliment you could have from the players I've gotten the opportunity to work with, to like trust and love you enough to put you in a situation to work with one of their friends. It's highly known that guys are commodities, right? Like, and you are only as good as your last play. So to find people who don't have an ulterior motive is tough. And I think that that's where I was really successful with the guys, because I would tell them, like, my job is to help you. Mm-hmm. Everything that you get from me is going to be founded in trust and love. Like, trust that I'm going to give you the very best that I have. Does it mean that it's always going to be perfect? No, but it can be perfectly intended, right? Like, they may have done something on film and then done something different the next week, but I'm never going to put you in a bad position on purpose.
That's right.
And so being able to have that, I think we exceeded the expectations of the openness and receptivity from the players themselves. I think the place that was really hard would be us internally versus the world externally. The world had all these narratives that made it so that there was a whole lot more than just football going on. Mm-hmm. The conversation wasn't, you know, can Jen Welter coach these guys? Will she be a good addition to the Arizona Cardinals? The conversation was, can a woman coach in the NFL? Mm-hmm. So your narrative doesn't get to be your own. Mm-hmm. And with that, I think the hardest part is that being that person means that you don't just get to have only your own story.
Yeah.
That means that if people don't like that change, they're not going to like you, not because they don't like me, but because of what you represent.
That's right.
I've been told mine is the face of change and also the face of nightmares. Mm. Now, I think this is pretty funny. I'm like, damn, face of nightmares looks pretty good to me. At any time, what that means is that anytime the conversation came up, they would see my face. So if it was a conversation that we know football is not always the most, you know, forward moving place in our society, right? Then I would always be seen as the problem, not as, you know, Jen Welter or Coach Jen, or we love her, or she did a great job, but what does she represent that then is bigger than yourself? And that, I think now I have a better grasp of that, but I think back then I certainly didn't understand it.
Right.
I would say that probably, you know, I was really lucky in terms of some of the mentors that I had within the Cardinals. Like Larry Foote was my direct mentor, and you couldn't ask for a better just dude. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Straight Detroit. So everything he tells you is going to be to the point, maybe more than you want. And yet he always guided me both in, like, me personally and the game as a whole. And he was always even bigger on the fact that I had experience as a player, as a coach, and a PhD.
Right.
You can do this job. You can do what I do. Like, you already proved it.
Yeah.
Not everybody can do what you are set to do.
That's right.
And Daryl Drake also was big on the degree. And he told me about, you know, he was our receivers coach at that point. Unfortunately, the world lost a really good man earlier this year. Mm-hmm. He was with the Steelers when he passed away. But he was the one who taught me about his work with, like, coaching Brandon Marshall and how, you know, they needed more psychology and more insight into players' mentalities within coaching. And, you know, and the fact that that part hasn't translated, I think is what I would say didn't meet my expectations. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I think what I find interesting about some of what you're saying too is, you know, the role of being, you know, a pioneer, or the role of being a groundbreaker, right, is one, it's not just about you or even like the people that you're impacting. It's kind of like this, you know, before you and after you kind of path that you're set on, that you have kind of this responsibility and this kind of almost pressure, right? We talk a lot about in some of our curriculum and how we approach things, like, pressure is a privilege, right? And, you know, so the pressure, assuming that you felt some to be that person, was really just because of all the privilege that you're having to, like, come in and be that person. Not everybody's cut out for that. You know, like, I think of Jackie Robinson's one of my, like, idols and all time favorite athletes. I wasn't even, you know, I never even saw him play, right? Obviously, big age gap. But kind of watching and studying what he had to go through in Major League Baseball, like a part of what I admire is having to face that pressure of being the first to do something because of what you talked about. Like, listen, I don't want to be the last, right? And so, you know, I mean, and then the influence that you have in that environment is 10x, whatever, right? It's so much, it's more exponential on what you have to be not only to be who you are professionally, to be like really good at your job, which I know you want to walk in there to be really good at your job, gain respect as a coach, not as a female coach, but as a coach. And the Arizona Cardinals do have a great program. You know, you got players like Larry Fitzgerald, who's like the best in the world, you know, just the best, right? And, you know, I can only imagine how he embraced you and also kind of carried that message for you too. So just fantastic. And it's just interesting. I'm always interested about expectations because I think that when it comes to, you know, how we, you know, goals that we set and meet or don't meet, how expectations play into it. So that's just why I wanted to kind of ask about that.
It's great. You know, and Dr. Jen, I take really good notes. You can't see them all. But I had two, and I do these little bubble things around, and the two words I had bubbles around were trust and love, because that was the theme, and then you actually just mentioned both of those in your last comments. You know, I don't think you can build any great team without a strong foundation of trust. I mean, you know, I think that's proven. How do you build trust when you go on to any team or when you work with an individual? You know, what do you do to build trust?
So for me, you know, there are a lot of things that I looked at, especially with the guys, and, you know, they didn't know me. They didn't even know what it could be like for a woman to be in that situation. And with all even just the culture right now with women and men, one of the things that I really think was so important was humor, first of all. Like, we're going to say things that just come out wrong, right? Like, I have this theory that every single one of us has moments where, like, something was really good up here. Unfortunately, something went terribly wrong by the time it came out here.
Right.
And you can either freak out or you can laugh it out, right? Because there were moments where it'd be like, and, you know, it's intended as a compliment, but the world might not see it that way, right? So, like, there was, like, I remember we were doing something. We're in the middle of the grind of training camp. You know, I mean, this is a grind. Like, nobody looks good. Nobody smells good. Nobody likes each other. Like, just be straight up, right? We've seen your faces way too often, right? We're done. And one of the guys was just beat down. It was like a hard day. You know, Arizona hot. Like, everybody is just nasty. He was like, man, this training camp's a grind. Like, no woman can do this. And I just looked at him and I was like, bro. And he was like, oh, coach, you don't count. You're one of us. Now, to him, that's the biggest compliment that he could give me. Uh-huh. And, you know, and I would laugh. I'd be like, you just said that out loud.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, I know exactly what you mean. But I'm also going to coach you up on the fact that please don't ever say that outside of the circle of trust.
Yeah, that's right.
Someone will not know what you mean. And he's like, all right, good point. But we would laugh about stuff like that. And then because of that, like, because there was no, like, easy freak out, and I would joke with them just as hard as they would joke with me, you know, and I would even joke back. I'd be like, listen, if you're going to go there with me, son, you better go all the way in. Because remember, I have a PhD in psychology, and I mess with minds for a living. Right? So they'd be like, oh, yeah, oh, she threw the dot in the car. It's the mic drop. We would back and forth. So that they knew there was no real wrong answer. Like, yeah. I would say, like, intent is everything. I will always give you the benefit of the doubt, right? Mm-hmm. With those little moments, I am here to make you better. And you know what? If that means me telling you, don't ever say that in the big wide world. And that's a part of it. And the other thing I would, you know, that I think the guys would tell you, and actually Kevin Minter pointed this out to me. He was our captain at Hunt. Somebody asked him later, like, what was your biggest fear about having her be your coach? And he goes, I don't know if it was as much a woman, right? Because that's what everybody assumed. He's like, but new coaches are tough, because new coaches, it's like they come in and they got to say something like all the time just to prove that they belong.
Yeah.
She never did that. He said she was just so smooth. Like, you could tell she'd done it before, and everything she said added value. And so to me, that was one of the big things, is knowing that there could be potential communication problems, just imagine, right? Like I always tried to put myself in the guy's shoes. Imagine me like yelling at you, getting in your face, saying something. We do that in football all the time. But if you yell back, what happens? Oh, he's a sexist. Doesn't matter what I said, if I was wrong or this. So I never wanted that to be the dynamic. So instead, I was a master at like the strong pull aside, right? Like, hey, next time, try this. Mm-hmm. When it worked, they wanted more. And so I just tried to make sure that anytime I said something, it added value. And then they also knew that I would help them, whether it was, you know, something that was going on at home, because if your mind is home, it's not here on the X's and O's. And if you'll trust me to help you with something in your everyday life, like it's not really hard to understand that I'd be like, hey, when the line squeezes, you know, you gotta squeeze to the line, get healed up, and then keep maintain outside and then break off and sack the quarterback.
Right.
That stuff becomes really easy because you know that we have such trust that it means, you know what, if you have a bad moment and you say something, I'm gonna be like, yep. Let me know when you feel better. And we're gonna do the same thing because the foundation is trust and love. So for me, that was always developing a relationship and understanding that extended past just the utility of X's and O's. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I would spend my, if it was an extra moment where a lot of the coaches would sit together, well, I already see them. I already talked to them enough. I don't need that extra 5 minutes, right? If I could connect with my players, like, how are they doing? Like, just take the time to sit, talk to them, and get to know them. You know, that was what I was going to do. And so we had a lot of conversations that ended well beyond football.
That is so great. Bring value. Don't try to do too much and over-explain stuff. And be humorous, add humor. And, you know, it's funny, Harry knows my younger sister. She reminds me a lot of you from the standpoint of she coaches boys varsity basketball in Toledo, Ohio. And she does a lot of the same stuff. Like she uses humor. She played Division I college basketball. She's like you. She earned her keep. She knows the stuff. But she has to build trust with them because they're like, who is this? You know, when she first comes in. And she does that by you know, humor and some of the things that you mentioned. So that's awesome. Thank you for that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's really good. So listen, I've heard you say, you know, that you didn't always feel like you were allowed to dream about the NFL, right? And it was never really an option. Tell me more about that, because I also think I believe I heard that you didn't. It's not like you started playing like when you were little. I think a lot of people probably assume that you started playing when you were like 5-6 years old playing Pop Warner. You didn't start playing until you were like 20 something, right?
22.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Vero Beach, Florida. So football is like a way of life down there. I remember going to the games. Like I just remember looking down at the field and thinking those were like the real life superheroes.
Yeah.
Look at the big helmets and the pads, and I thought that the lights were the brightest in the world. And I just wanted to be one. And football was also the first place in the world that somebody told me there was a difference between what boys were allowed to do and what girls were. So I didn't have the opportunity to play. I was a multi-sport athlete. I was a 2-year captain of the soccer team, was ranked in tennis for a number of years, but never had that football permission. Played rugby in college all 4 years for BC. Got recruited to the under 23 national team when I think they finally realized how small I am. And, you know, I was playing flag football on weekends. Full disclosure, I came from rugby. I never really got the flag thing. You know, I was still tackling. It was probably a problem, but it's true.
Yeah.
The general manager of a team in Massachusetts called the Mass Mutiny called the flag league I was playing and asked if there were any girls who were playing flag that they thought could play tackle. And full disclosure, I never stopped tackling. So I think that they were probably like, please take
her. Yeah, she's the one. Yeah, she's the one.
I went to an open tryout and, you know, I remember when I was about to go to that tryout, I got really scared. all of a sudden, right? This football was like the love of my life, right? It was like this unrequited love. It was like that crush you always hoped would notice you, right? Like, oh my gosh, he's so cute. I hope he notices me. And then he does and asks you out, like, oh no, what if he has like dead fish hands and he tries to hold my hand and he's not as good as I thought, right? Like, what if this all falls apart?
Yeah, it's like the chase that's really what's attractive.
And right, I didn't know how I would handle it if the sport that I had always loved didn't love me back. And, you know, I remember wondering if I, you know, should even go. Here I have this tryout, right? And then I did what I think all of us do when we're close to something so important is that voice of doubt gets really loud. And what I thought about was, you know, I could live with not making it. I could live with being told I was too small. I mean, I've been too small my whole life. But what I couldn't live with was wondering for the rest of my life, what would have happened if I would have just gone out for that football team? Mm-hmm. And I tell that to people because so often we think that greatness is like this easy path or this clear path, and it just makes sense. And for me, there was no clear path in football, right? And I went on to win, you know, 4 Super Bowls and be an 8-time Pro Bowler and play on the first and second U.S. national team. None of those things existed when I started, right? There was no U.S. national team when I started. And then we got to start that, right? Yeah. And in 2010, we won with such dominance that there's an international record that still holds. We were the most dominant football team that has ever walked the planet. 201-0
Damn.
Over 3 games.
Y'all just whooping up on some ass. Just, that's not even right.
And this is a team of women who, when we talk about equality, right? Like you said, like, you know, do you think we've come far enough? Well, let me tell you why I think we need so much more work.
Mm-hmm.
American football, right? It's America's game. It basically has taken Sunday from the church and other days of the week as well.
Yeah, that's right.
And yet it's only America's game for less than half the population, because it's still the only sport that doesn't have parity at any level from peewees to the pros, right? Mm-hmm. For that dominant team that went and won in 2010, 201-0 shutouts across every game. Every one of the players on that team had to fundraise $3,000 and pay to play to represent the USA in America's game. We had to take a month off work, right? And we were already not getting paid to play on our own teams. And yet none of us thought any different, right? There was no film. We had 3 coaches. We had training camp in Round Rock, Texas in June, outdoors. The field was so hard that we called it the Rock because you couldn't even wear cleats because you were like skating across it.
Right.
The NFL didn't even do 2-a-days anymore. One's a walkthrough. And we had 3-a-days because we had no idea what we were stepping into, because there was no film on any other team. So you just had to prepare and grind for every situation.
So
it's in a sport called the final frontier for women in sports. And we all did it, no question. And yet the thing I've said for a long time, and I still believe, is like, we have been the best kept secret in sports. We just didn't want to be a secret anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me and for every other woman in the game, yeah, you might want to see how you could create a life and a career in this sport that has changed so many lives. And yet there was no path out, right? You're doing it straight up for the belief that we could change culture by winning in football.
Wow.
Right. I always said, if this is the final frontier and we win here, then we can do anything. Right. And that's still what drives a lot of us to this day, because it's still ongoing for us.
Yeah.
It's still there. I mean, 2015 to have the first female, right? Madden, for the first time, we had a female coach in there. That took me working with Madden to look at all of the areas where we could intersect and change the conversations that we're having as a society, because football suffers from sins of omission. You don't have to tell a girl she doesn't belong there. It's confirmed in every place that she is not. Mm-hmm. And this is also the reason why, you know, they say the face of change or the face of nightmares, because I'm going to point out those things and have those conversations because I feel like it's vitally important. And I think if we don't have those conversations, we also undersell the men, because it's been men who have been my greatest advocates throughout my career, not because women necessarily wouldn't have.
In the position, right.
But there were no women.
Yeah.
Every big door that was open for me was open for a man. So if we look at what equality has to look like, it has to be one of allyship. It's not women for women at the expense of men, because there are certain places that women haven't been allowed to go, right? If you look at racial equity, same thing, right? We have to be great allies to each other, because, you know, there's certain clubs that certain people haven't been let in.
That's right.
You know, if you're gonna change from the inside, then you need somebody who's been given permission to be inside.
Right. Wow. It's really, you've created a movement, which is awesome, because you're laying a pathway for so many people behind you. You know, Harry and I were talking about this offline. You know, there's been so many people to you know, risk their life, their reputation, their careers, so that Harry and I can have a podcast and have freedoms. Same with you, too, as well. And it's neat to see you take that to the next level. And I think that's what we're being called to do. Everybody sees, like, hey, there's a problem. You know, it's kind of like, you know, as a family, we have some issues with, you know, in our family. It's not, you know, nothing's perfect, but we need to address these issues. And it's cool to see the movement that you have and have been pushing forward. The last question that I have for you, and then we'll get into some of the rapid questions, and Harry will kick those off. You talk a lot about some of the things that you've done. What are one or two things that you don't do?
I am very selective on the things that I will do, right? Like, I always say that decisions with me are an easy yes or a hard no. An easy yes is, yes, I'm going to do it. We have to figure out the details. It's the right thing. A hard no means, I don't care what you say or what you're selling or how much, like, I'm not going to do it, right? And I think making those choices really defines who you are. And it also makes you a known commodity. And the scouting report is going to be relatively simple across the board if you ask people about me, right? What they say is going to be relatively the same. How they feel about it is going to be very different, right? Some people will love me for it. Other people will hate me for it. But their reasons behind it will be relatively the same.
Well, that's amazing. You know, we talk about room tilting. And, you know, for me, I think one of the fantastic qualities about those that can tilt a room that I think I see pretty consistently is the courage and their conviction, right? The courage and their conviction. And I think that's why people are black or white on you, right? Or there's not gray, because those that have courage and their conviction, you really know who they are, because they're giving you that authenticity every time, right or wrong, and, you know, different opinion or whatever, you know, where they're coming with, like, decisive behavior. They're coming with a bias for action, right? And I think people follow that, right? Not everybody's going to follow that person, because, you know, by definition, some people may just not agree and may not be down, right? But enough people do, the right people do, the right people follow that. And so that's what I love about you. And I could tell from just our first 5 minutes of conversation is that's a quality that you have that I think has been a tremendous, like, you know, a tremendous reason why you've been successful, not only at the NFL for a time, but every step of the way that you've taken in, and your story is still being written. That's just really fun, you know.
Like, just a great, really, honestly, Dr. Jen, like, you know, we get to meet a lot of people. You are a fantastic human being. And that, you know, I mean, goes, I think, supersedes any of the other accolades. And you should be really proud of that.
Right. I don't want to be surrounded by people who aren't there to move the needle. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I'm the one who will stand on a table for a guy. I've done it before. I did it with the Legends. Right. Mm-hmm. Some of my players are like, man, I know, like, I remember one of my players, Keyshawn Freeman, right? And they were ready to cut him because of some of those alignment dings. And I was like, just give him to me on D-line, right? Just give me him. I will switch position. I will do whatever, but we need this guy. And we did. And he ended up being one of our, you know, one of our best players. And somebody to this day who's like, I know I would have been cut if it wasn't for you. And yet, you know, other people are looking around and I'm like, how does nobody else see this? Right. But those things have to be the decisions that will define you, because otherwise someone else will define you and you may not like what bucket they put you in.
Right. No doubt. Well, speaking of defining some things, we're going to do some rapid fire just for people to get to know you a little more, some fun stuff. So you've been in the NFL. Who is your favorite player in NFL? And I'll say this, either current or past, maybe they're not playing anymore.
Oh, no, can't answer that one. Too many favorites.
All right. Well, that's fair. That's fair then. Well, let me ask you this. Defense or offense?
Oh, for me?
Yeah.
Defense.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure we got one clear answer out of you. That's the one. I already knew that answer.
Superstar KO Madden this year. First female head coach in Madden, right? Mm-hmm. Do you know what my team is? Okay, so literally I am the first female head coach in Madden. My team is Team Shutdown. And that motto that they gave me, and I know they took it right from me because I know the guys who did it, is if they can't score, they can't win. So we have the number one rated defense in Madden. So if you are a defensive person, you will choose to Team Shutdown. I have great friends who are quarterbacks, right? Like, you know, Jameis is a good friend. Cam's a good friend. And I'll watch it and I'll be like, oh, that was a great defensive play. Oh, shoot, it's my boy.
I love it. I love it. I love it. So, okay, switching gears here. What's one interesting thing that you've done during the pandemic?
The kids' books.
Okay.
We have three out now. The fourth one's getting ready to come out. But we really did invent a whole brand. It's called Critter Fitter.
Okay.
Critters to get kids fitter.
I love that.
This one is when a ladybug can't hug. It's all about social distancing and just the trauma of being separated. This one, Busy Bee, is an adventure in movement. It's all like animal bases exercise. You know, like we shake our wings and do all those funny things. And then Wearing a Mask Says, I Love You. Duh.
I love it.
I know that you said that you had a niece. I read something about a niece. What's her favorite book then? Which one?
She actually educated her brother on the fact that you have to read these two together. So Ladybug is in this book, and then she kind of extends stuff on this book. But, you know, she really loves this one because she loves to name all the ants.
Nice.
The ants are our frontline workers. So, like, she'll go through it, and she's like, that's Fixer Ant, but loves the stories. Oh, and this is Sarge Ant.
I love it.
Where can we get those?
They're on Amazon. So you can drop ship them on Amazon. We self-published because... you know, I went to a publisher who told me you could have them out in a year. I hope they're irrelevant in a year. Damn the dinosaur. That's what I call it.
Right.
There's a reason why publishing is struggling right now, because you just said books that they need yesterday could be out in a year. So I figured out how to self-publish on Amazon. So they're there right now.
That's great. Yeah, you got to go check them out. Critter Fitter, right?
Yep.
Love it. Love it. Okay, so who's someone you look up to?
Nancy Lieberman. Nancy has been a friend of mine for a long time. A pioneer in basketball and a dear, dear friend. She's gone through things that I went through before I did. Mm-hmm. Yet we laugh all the time on like our perspectives. Like, be like, did you take that directly out of my brain? She's been somebody who always, like, no matter what I've gone through, like, she can relate, even though and it's in a different sport. So it's not like there's any element of competition. But I look at the way she's moved in basketball and moved culture through basketball. And I think, you know, I aspire to be someone like her just in the world of football.
That's great. That's great. So last one, when you played, or even actually as a coach, really, what's a pregame ritual? What's a pregame ritual that you go through?
All the time music, right? To get you in the mind, to write the right mind frame, kind of going through the visualizations of some of your best plays, really getting you into that persona that you are. In terms of the coaches as a coach, y'all have to read about this one in my book, but I was known for writing notes and leaving them in my linebackers' lockers. I thought the locker room was like Vegas. I'm just going to say this is where we differed. I thought the locker room was like Vegas. And yet when I was being interviewed by a reporter after this first big game, a reporter comes up to me and she's like, so history was made tonight at University of Phoenix Field. For the first time in the history of the NFL, a woman took the sidelines as a coach. And we heard you did something very special for your players. You left notes in their lockers. Would you care to comment? But I will say that when asked about it, Kevin Minter told them in his entire football career, he had never had a coach care like that. Mm. That was the takeaway, is, you know, that they really just were moved by how much it mattered. And to me, it was just a note to like reinforce the things that we talked about during that week, right? Like, you know, hey, be the leader of the huddle, own it, blah, 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 like little reminders, because I know how powerful the voice of doubt is. And I didn't know what their internal voice would tell them, but I knew what mine would. And I wanted them to have the strength to hear me in their head and block out the rest of the world. So,
well, Dr. Jen Welter, thank you for joining us. Really excited. It was really exciting to have you. And you just dropped some great bombs on us today and some thoughts, and really excited to see what you do next, what you continue to do and build and create. And so, you know, actually the other thing, DJ, I was saying, man, we might need Jen as a speaker, do we, for Limitless Minds, for our company? You know, we need speakers, Jen. So you got to come through, because, you know, we can talk about that offline. But I can see you right now impacting people in both the corporate space and even the consumers that we're heading to. So you know, we have to touch base. But thank you so much for taking the time.
You have a gift, Dr. Jen, and I'm glad you're sharing it with the world. Thank you for taking the time with us.
You've been listening to the Room Tilters podcast, hosted by DJ Eitzen and Harry Wilson, presented by Limitless Minds.